right now by somebody I considered a very good friend. He is a New York Times bestselling author. His books include The Bad Guys Won, Love Me, Hate Me, Boys Will Be Boys, The Rocket That Fell to Earth, Sweetness, Showtime, and Gunslinger, The Remarkable, Improbable, Iconic Life of Brett Favre. And he's got another book. It's out right now. Football for a Buck, The Crazy Rise and Crazier Demise of the USFL. It is out right now. Jeff Perlman is in studio. My man, how you living, Jeff?
I'm grinding.
Yeah, you are.
I'm grinding. It's not like writing a Brett Favre book or promoting a Brett Favre book or a Walter Payton book. It's a totally different monster. But it's good. It's a challenge.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about that. I can't wait to get the answer to that question. But I do want to ask you about this because you tweeted about this yesterday. And I want to ask you right off the top. You have covered sports for the better part of two decades. Have you ever seen anybody retire at halftime the way Vontae Davis did? And what do you make of the reaction from his teammate, Lorenzo Alexander?
I kind of thought good for him for staying. It was refreshing. It wasn't political. It was refreshing. I think it's crazy. I've never seen that. To just walk off and just like, I'm done.
Sure.
Like, pretend you're hurt and stay on the sideline. Do something. You know, like something. I thought, cross the line.
Hey, look, I said the same thing. Pretend you're hurt, stay on the sideline, think it over. Hey, look, and I want to be very clear about this. I'm sitting in an air-conditioned studio in Southern California, having never worn a helmet before, so I'm not going to be the guy to say, you're a quitter, you didn't retire. Right. But I had his teammates to say that for me. I didn't have to.
Right. I agree with you. I mean, it kind of reminded me of Mike Tyson sort of quitting in the ring, you know, Evander Holyfield, when he basically quit that fight. I think there comes a point where some athletes where they're just like, I'm not feeling this. But it's weird. It's not a natural thing to have in a...
Well, I'm sure they feel that way, but they wait at least until after the game.
Right.
All right, now, when you
It'd be great if I walked off your set right now. I'm like, I'm just done with this.
But if you want to sell a book or two, I'd stick it out and fight, Jeff. All right, so in terms of the book, you said this is not like doing a Brett Favre book. This is a different animal altogether. How so?
I mean, a lot of people don't remember the USFL. A lot of people don't know its impact. A lot of people don't know the names. When you tell people Steve Young played in the USFL, a lot of people say, what the hell is the USFL? You know, so it was a labor of love. I fought for about 9 years to even get a book deal for this. I mean, I kept getting rejected and rejected and rejected. I took less money to do this by far. I attached it to the Favre book I did last time. I actually took less money to do Favre, so they would let me do this. It was just intense. It was really intense.
So why, Jeff? And since I've known you, you've talked about this book. Yeah. And you finally wrote this book. And you're like you said, there was a lot of rejection. Listen, you're a guy who's principled and about integrity. And it's a labor of love. You still got to feed that family. You've got to put food on the table. You moved out to California. This is not a cheap place to live. Why was this book and this topic so important to you?
I just thought the USFL was the greatest story nobody knew. I really did. I thought it was just this insane bolt of lightning that came along and lasted 3 years, and the players were like, the names were huge, the impact was huge, the stories are insane. I've never written a book with stories this insane before. Never, not even close. It just was this great package. I knew it was a good book. So
Jeff Perlman joins me in studio. He's got a brand new book out. You know, I want to get into some of these stories, but for those who don't remember, and you made this point, how did the USFL first come about? What is the origin story here?
Well, there was a guy, David Dixon, who was a New Orleans art dealer and wealthy. And back in the 60s, he was really pushing for the city of New Orleans to get an NFL team. And the NFL was just denying. And finally, he actually visited with Paul Brown. And he said, the former Browns coach and founder, and said, I have this idea for spring football. And Paul Brown's like, that's a great idea. You should do that. But then the Saints came. And he kind of put it off. He still had it in his head, though, when he met with George Allen, the Redskins, former Redskins coach, and he said, I still have this idea. And George Allen's like, he was a very excitable man. You need to do this. Do this now. That is the best idea. Don't even wait a minute. And that was sort of the idea behind it in the basis. We're just going to spring football. The idea was spring football. We're not really going head-to-head with the NFL. It's just another league. You can pay two big-time players, and then we're going to keep it sort of low-key. Two-point conversion, you know, coaches challenge. We're going to draft regionally. So like the Philadelphia Stars will be drafting players out of Penn State, out of Pitt primarily. Tampa was drafting Florida State. It was, I honestly believe, a great, really great basic idea.
Oh, it was. It was a great idea with some star value and some amazing stories to go along with it. The book is called Football for a Buck. Jeff Perlman is the author. He's in studio. The book is out right now. Now, we're talking about amazing stories, amazing characters. I mean, I'm tempted to go rapid fire and ask you about some of these guys. We're talking Reggie White, Steve Young, Jim Kelly, and someone like Stanley Floyd, who never played a down of college football, but he did race a horse on That's Incredible. Or you and I could start with Greg Fields. Who was Greg Fields?
It's the best. So Greg Fields, you never heard of him, right?
Oh, I know him, yeah.
Oh, you do?
Sure.
Greg Fields played at Grambling, and he was with the Colts as a rookie in 79.
I know of him because of you in the book.
Oh, yeah. Yes. No, I meant before this.
Yeah, yeah.
79, he's with the Colts. 80s, in camp with the Falcons, they cut him. He refuses to leave. So they actually bring an armed security guard in to get him out. He leaves. He's signed by the LA Express. 1984, John Hadle is a coach of the Express. John Hadle tells the assistants, we're going to cut Greg. They're like, you just want to be careful when you do this. I'll be fine. You know, calls him in. Greg, you've done a good job here, but... And as soon as he says that, Fields reaches back, punches him in the face. Guys come rushing in. I'm going to have to kill you. I'm going to kill you. They hire this guy, Nelson Mercado, who I interviewed. He was Liberace's bodyguard at the time. And they hired him away from Liberace in Las Vegas. I swear to God. And he comes. And now he's the new protector of Greg Fields. And Greg Fields is calling in death threats. He has a gun in his trunk.
Where's Hard Knocks when we need it?
It would be so good.
He punched John Hadle in the face and threatened to kill him.
Yes, threatened to kill him. And he also threatened to kill the defensive coordinator. And he's...
But at that time, how much money are we talking about? What was the salary for a guy like Greg Fields at that time?
Greg Fields was probably making about 60.
Okay.
And not great. I mean, it was okay.
So that's a reason to go. A reason to threaten to kill somebody.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, he starts calling in death threats. The team, they hire Liberace's security guard. He's showing up at practices just staring. Right? He's calling in. He's showing up at games. They put a tracker on his car. And this is the beauty of it all. Everyone knows about this in the U.S. about it. Big news. But the San Antonio Gunslingers need defensive line help. So they sign Greg Fields. Okay? He shows up and they greet him in helmets and pads as a joke. Like, don't hit us. Okay. The owner of the Gunslingers.
Did he think that was funny?
Yeah, he did, actually.
Okay.
The owner of the Gunslingers is a guy named Clinton Mangus. He stopped paying his players. And the Gunslingers were famous because they had a coach with seven fingers who coached from the stands. He'd sit in the stands next to his wife and coach the team. I kid you not.
Best league ever.
It's the best league ever. So they signed Greg Fields. He stops getting paid. 1985. He follows the owner of the team home. He has a baseball bat in his trunk. He pulls up to the guy's side. The owner gets out of the car. He sees Greg Fields. Owner's a little guy. Greg Fields is huge. Greg Fields has a baseball bat. He goes, I see where you live. I know you got money. You better pay me. And he's holding the bat. And the owner goes, wait here. And he goes in his house and he comes back out. I've actually had the number mistaken. I've said 10,000. So he had $17,000 in a paper bag.
In cash.
In cash. Gives it to Greg Fields. He's like, are we good? Fields is like, we're good. Now I just want to say, my son Emmett, who actually came to your set once, he and I did a road trip to find Greg Fields because all I had were two addresses.
The hell's the matter with you?
I'm a horrible parent.
I know you're a journo and all, but are you kidding me?
I know. My son was 9 at the time. I'm like, road trip. He's like, great.
And I was going to crack this joke about, hey, Jeff, what happens when Greg Fields says to you, you pay me, I've got a bat, but now I don't want to make the joke because I don't want him come to find me.
I know.
I'm terrified of this guy.
He's awesome. He's the best.
You found him.
Found him. So I had two addresses. We walked throughout San Francisco, knocked on one, lockbox. Second house was in the projects of San Francisco. His sister answered the door. I held up a copy of my book, another book. I was like, this is me, blah, blah, blah. She's like, I can give him your phone number. That's all I got. I'm driving home 20 minutes later. Hey, this is Greg. Who's this? I'm like, this is Jeff Perlman. No one's ever been more excited to talk to you. The next day, me, 9-year-old Emmett Perlman, Greg Fields, food court,
you
Sacramento, California.
Emmett to see Greg Fields.
I did. And Greg Fields, we met at a Cold Stone Creamery at a food court in Sacramento at a mall. And he was fantastic. And it was one of the great finds of my life.
And so, I mean, amazing. And I've seen you've gone after a lot of people in terms of trying to find them, and then you do or you don't. Yeah. And you found this guy and lived up to all the hype. How was he? Was he pretty pleasant?
He was forthright, pleasant, a little bit punch drunk from probably a lot of football, you know, but great. Confirmed the stories, told a lot of stories. It was good.
His book's got an amazing story. Football for a Buck. It's about the USFL. Jeff Perlman's the author. The book is out right now. You should get it. He's in studio. Let's talk LA Express for a minute. Tom Ramsey, the quarterback, was at a party in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
Everybody was there, including Hank Aaron. Ramsey walks up to Aaron. He introduces himself. What happened next, and what advice did Aaron give to Ramsey?
It was one of the great... So Tom Ramsey's favorite athlete is still Hank Aaron. And Hank Aaron, he's shocked that Hank Aaron knows who he is. And Aaron says, you got the money, man. You got the effing money. That's what it's all about.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's so good.
Like, how would he even know Tom Ramsey?
I don't even know. Well, he was a quarterback at UCLA. Then later, the LA Express stopped paying players, and they had Steve Young, and they were taking a bus to get the final game in LA Express. You would know that the final game in the history of the LA Express at home was at Pierce College. Because they couldn't
feel... 818 for life, baby.
Have you been to Pierce College?
Let me tell you about Pierce College. So I went to Calabasas High School, and the joke was, I'll put aside all the jokes about being in 13th grade. You were a degenerate if you went to Pierce. No offense, Pierce College. As JUCOs go, it's really well-respected. It's a really good JUCO school. But yes, they practiced there, didn't they?
No.
They played.
They had their final game ever because they weren't playing at the LA Coliseum, which was a 90,000 seat stadium, and they're drawing about 3,000 by the end. They had a Steve Young poster giveaway day. First 10,000 fans.
That's
first
right.
10,000 fans get Steve Young posters. 7,000 showed up.
Incredible.
So final game is at Pierce College because they can't fill the Coliseum.
Woodland Hills.
Woodland Hills. The bus is driving the team. The bus driver stops and says, unless I get my $500, I ain't moving. They pass around a hat. This is crazy. The two quarterbacks that day, Doug Williams, Arizona Outlaws.
Wow.
Steve Young, LA Express. They meet at the end of the game. Doug Williams comes, shakes his hand, says, what the hell are we doing here? And that was the last home game in LA Express history.
Jeff Perlman joining us in studio. It's incredible. Now, there might not have been enough money to go around and guys weren't getting paid, but there was more than enough alcohol and drug usage to go around. What was the alcohol consumption and drug use like in the USFL?
Oh, enormous. Enormous. There was a guy in the Birmingham Stallions named Chuck Clanton. He was a safety, came out of Auburn. He told me they played a game in San Antonio. They were a much better team. And he said the night before, like 80% of the team was snorting coke on the plane. And they showed up and they got killed. Then my favorite guy is Richard Johnson, who later played with the Detroit Lions. He was a receiver for the Houston Gamblers. He used to smoke a joint before every game. Like, literally, that was part of his
preparation. Like, on the way to the game, right?
Yeah, he would be smoking a joint. And that was his thing. And he was a great – he had 110 catches first year. He was great. Well, he had a teammate named Vince Corville, who wasn't as good a receiver. Nice guy. And he sees Richard Johnson smoking joints. And he's like, I don't know, works for him. He's never smoked pot before. He starts smoking a joint before the game. He gets on the field. He's just overcome by paranoia. He doesn't know what's going on.
No way, right? See, I mean, if smoking, and I'm not a guy that bakes, I'm not here to judge, I just don't do it, but I know that paranoia is something that comes along with it. Dude, how could you be playing football, even at that level, if you're paranoid and guys are looking to knock you the hell out?
Well,
how do you do that and what the coaches think?
The coaches would, there was one coach who would check on him every game and be like, you medicated today? Okay, we're good. They would smell, another teammate said he would smell it coming out of his hotel room and be like, all right, Richard's going to be good today. The other thing they did, they had a strength, offensive line coach named Bob Young, who played for a long time with the Cardinals. And Bob Young didn't just want his guys to use steroids. He insisted, if you do not use steroids,
you're not
playing on this offensive line.
Wow.
And he would force the guys to use roids.
Jeff Perlman's my guest. The book is called Football for a Buck. It is out right now. All right, Jeff, so we literally just blew right through that entire segment. We were out of time. We didn't even talk about Donald Trump. Is there any way that you want to stay over? Now, you know we don't do this in the jungle.
Come on.
Do you want to stay over and do one more segment?
I love this show.
Let's do it. All right, Jeff Perlman's in studio. I could not get to all of it. I tried to go rapid fire, but that's how much good content there is in this book, and that's how awesome that league was, the USFL. The book is called Football for a Buck. Jeff Perlman wrote it. He took less money to write this book. It's been a labor of love. He wanted to get it done. He's been talking about it for years and years and years. It's now out, and he's in studio. Let me do this. I can't promise you that I'll take a telephone call, but I'll open it up, and we'll see. 1-800-636-8686. Donald Trump played a role with the USFL and had a role in the demise of the USFL. I want to get into that and more. And also, if you buy this book, you may get something in return other than great reading. All of that coming up. Quicken Loans, because I'm in the Quicken Loan Studios. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. Almost never ever do this, especially coming off a long segment, but I did not get done what I set out to do in that last segment. So we carry my guest over for another segment. Jeff Perlman is in studio. Just to reset this very quickly, he is a New York Times bestselling author. He has written several books, but the latest book is out right now, and it's called Football for a Buck, The Crazy Rise and the Crazier Demise of the USFL. In the last segment, we told some amazing stories. Jeff, I want you to just reset this really quickly. It's a labor of love, but you did take less money to do this deal.
Yeah.
Again, so why is this particular project, in case somebody just jumped in right now, why did this mean so much to you? Because you literally have talked about this league and this book for years, and you took less money. In fact, let me put it another way. What did your agent say when you first said that you want to do this book?
So I have a great agent, but he said, I kept bugging him about it. And he said, Jeff, nobody wants an F in USFL book. And I really wanted it. I'll tell you one thing that's funny is when I was a senior in Mayo Pack, New York, my AP English final paper, it could be 20 pages on whatever subject you wanted. And I said, I'm going to do the USFL. My teacher's like, you really want to do the USFL? Seriously? And I handed in 40 pages on the downfall of the USFL. It was called The Downfall of the USFL. I got a B+. I was really pissed off. I'm sure my teacher, is there any way Mr. Height, who was a great teacher, read 40 pages at the end of the school year?
He gave you B+, maybe so.
Yeah, maybe.
So what happens when you've got people like that that you respect, all right, an AP English teacher, mm-hmm. your agent, people you admire, people you respect telling you, dude, this is a bad idea. Nobody wants to read this. Why are you telling yourself, oh, no, this is a good idea and I'm going to do this no matter what?
Because it's very easy in life to just do the safe ideas. And if you look at my books, I'm happy about them all. I really am. I enjoyed the process. But what was the risk in writing about Brett Favre or Walter Payton? They were big topics. And they were great. I mean, great enjoyment for me. I really mean that. But I've never taken a real risk where I was just putting it out there and seeing what happened. So I just figured, to hell with it.
Jeff Perlman joining me in studio. The book is called Football for a Buck. It's about the USFL. As some people know, Donald Trump did play a role in the USFL and in the demise of the USFL. How did he first get involved?
Right, so originally, he was supposed to be an owner in 1983 when the league started. He was enlisted as a New York owner. And they have an owner meeting. It's a true story. They have an owner meeting in San Francisco. All the owners are supposed to show. They're waiting for Donald Trump, the New York owner. Nobody even knows who he is. A young guy waiting. Finally, a phone rings. They put on speaker. Hey, this is Donald. So, listen. Bad news. Not going to be able to do it. Got a big deal going on somewhere else. Good luck to all of you guys. Okay, click. The owners were horrified because that was a goodbye to their New York franchise. Huh. They ended up getting a guy from Oklahoma named Walter Duncan to own the team. So a year later, in 1980, after the 83 season, the owner of the Generals is selling the team. And Donald Trump, in the lead up, he decides to buy the team. I love the USFL. This is always saying, USFL is great. It's going to be great. I love what they're doing, blah, blah, blah. As soon as he becomes the owner of the Generals, we need to move to fall. Fall's where the action is. If God wanted football in the spring, he wouldn't create baseball, on and on and on. He has a secret meeting with Pete Rozelle, NFL commissioner at the time. And he says to Rozelle, he rents a suite at the pier, Trump does, and asks Rozelle if he'll meet with him. And he says to Rozelle, I don't really care about the USFL. I want an NFL team. What do I have to do to get in the NFL? A true, 100% true story. Wow. Rozelle says, as long as I am the commissioner of the NFL, as long as my heirs are involved with this league, you will never have a team in this league. Trump then pushes with this idea.
Why was that his response at that time?
Just being honest here, because he thought he was a con man.
Yeah.
And he thought he was a, you know, huckster, and he just didn't trust him. Also, what kind of guy throws under the bus his league? I mean, it's like if you start dating someone who cheated on her last boyfriend, you have to ask yourself, is this person going to be loyal to me?
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh. Sure.
So then he pushes this idea, we need to move to fall. We need to move to fall. Fall, 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 fall. And the whole thing is he wants an NFL team. And he thinks there'll be a merger or something. So ultimately, he convinces the other owners by this thing called lying that he has a fall TV deal lined up. And the networks are really excited. And they're all going to, fall is going to be great. There's millions of dollars, $90 million waiting for us in fall TV. Because the spring TV deal that the USFL had, it was with ESPN, it was ABC. It was a flawed deal. It wasn't horrible. It was good for a first-time league, but it was flawed. Didn't have blackouts in it, among other things. He tells them, I've met with the executives of TV, and they're really excited for football. He starts using his fake publicist, John Barron, which is him disguising his voice. And he calls different reporters. And he says, and this is all documented. I just want to be clear. This is not me with some...
And there really is no fall league at all.
No.
Okay.
So he starts documenting. There's no fall TV deal. There's no fall TV deal.
That's what I mean, right.
Yeah. And then he starts calling, and he calls newspapers, and he's saying, you know, Mr. Trump is really leading the movement for fall. If you want to talk to him, I can probably set that up.
This is a real thing. This
yes.
really happened.
Yes.
He's pretending to be his own publicist.
Yes.
Okay.
He pretended to be John Barron, and his son's name is Barron now, which makes it even worse. And so he does the fake publicist thing. He pushes this thing to fall. He runs, the NFL commissions a study based on fall. And here's the problem. The LA market went to crap in the USFL. The Chicago market went to super crap. The Washington market went to crap. They moved to Orlando. They needed New York. They needed New York. It was contractually in the USFL television deal. You have to have a team in New York. So you need him. So he is pushing for fall. And finally, he convinces the other owners, we're going to sue the NFL for an antitrust violation. He said that the NFL was monopolizing TV illegally, and we're going to sue them. And he hires Roy Cohen as the attorney. Roy Cohen, famous for the McCarthy era trials. And he tells the other owners, he promises them, I'm going to hire Roy Cohen. They're going to want to settle immediately. This is what he tells them.
How concerned was the NFL about the USFL at that time?
Think about it this way. Herschel Walker went to the USFL.
Sure.
Jim Kelly, Steve Young, Reggie White. They were stealing people left and right.
Right.
So, yeah, terrified. In the office, they used to call it the useless in the NFL office. And it's like, yeah, but... That was when nothing was going on. All of a sudden, they're signing Craig James and every other guy.
Sure.
So he says, we're going to sue them. We're going to hire Roy Cohen, and they're going to settle. Paul Tagliabue has a meeting with all the owners. The NFL owners are freaking out about this lawsuit because they did have a monopoly, and they were plotting to kill the USFL. They literally commissioned a study called something along the lines of, how do we kill the USFL?
Sure.
You know, it's like this thing. Paul Tagliabue, who's going to be the next commissioner, stands up in a meeting and says, if we settle, if we give in, every time someone challenges us from this time out, this time on, we're going to have a weakness. We cannot settle. The trial happens in New York. The other USFL owners are advising Donald Trump not to have this in New York, that other states will be more sympathetic to plaintiffs. Jerry Argovitz, the owner of the Houston Gamblers, is saying, do it in Texas. This is where we should do it. Trump doesn't listen. They want to call a bunch of players and coaches to testify. Trump doesn't listen. Their star witnesses are a drunk Howard Cosell, Al Davis, who testifies on behalf of the USFL, and Donald Trump. And the NFL attorney, Frank Rothman, sees Donald Trump as the greatest gift he's ever been given, because Trump goes up there and he's bombastic and he's arrogant and he comes off like a bully. And he made the USFL the bully of this entire thing. And what the jury ultimately decided at the end, and I interviewed one of the jurors for this, the USFL was right in everything they were saying, but ultimately they were at fault more than the NFL, and they gave them a dollar settlement. And here's the best moment of the whole freaking book, in my opinion. Donald Trump is in the courtroom. John Mara from the New York Giants is sitting next to him. They announce the verdict, or the settlement, the amount. Mara opens up his wallet, takes out a dollar bill, and hands it to Donald
Trump. Incredible.
It's the biggest middle finger I've ever heard of in pro sports.
The biggest middle finger you've ever heard of in all of sports.
Don't you think?
I want to make sure. No, I started to talk over you. I want to make sure they heard what you just said.
Here's your dollar.
Yes, I do think. Here's your buck. The book is called Football for a Buck. Jeff Perlman is the author. He's in studio. So how do you think all of that might influence Trump's relationship with the NFL right now?
I would say it this way. He tried buying the Baltimore Colts and failed. He had a meeting with Pete Rozelle that failed. He tried suing the NFL and that failed. He tried buying the Buffalo Bills and failed. He tried buying the New England Patriots and failed. He made a weak effort to buy the Dallas Cowboys and failed. When he was an owner in the USFL, he would be on his phone during the national anthem. He'd be doing interviews during the national anthem. I mean, there you go. Like, give me a break.
Jeff Perlman joining us. All right, before we go, let me quickly, if there's some reaction either by Twitter or via the phones, and I know there is, I said that I would get to this. Telephone number is toll free, 1-800-636-8686. All right, so Jeff in SoCal tweets, this USFL book sounds freaking amazing. One thing, though, clones can't read. Can you ask Perlman to make this into a movie for us? Yeah, I could, Jeff, but I won't. All right, keep moving. At SA Sports Honk tweets, great interview. Jeff Perlman always delivers. Wore the San Antonio Gunslingers and their quarterback, Rick Neuheisel. Clinton Mangus was typical. Check is in the mail. Cheapskate. That's somebody from San Antonio. Brian C60 tweets, wait, pot makes you paranoid? Well, that explains last Friday. Signed, Hawk, medicinal user. All right, let me check really quickly for a phone call. 1-800-636-8686. Let's go to, throw your headphones on really quickly. Okay. And, all right, this guy wants to get a book published. He's written a book and isn't sure how to go about getting it published. He currently lives on the streets, but he's one of our own. He's been calling the show for 20 years. Ira Craig. Ira, you're on with Jeff Perlman. What's up, Ira?
Hey, fellas. How you guys doing today?
Great.
Okay. Hey, Jeff, this is homeless book beggar guy, as I'm called on Twitter.
Okay.
Now, last year when I was in jail, I wrote a book. It's an autobiography. It's absolutely awesome. I heard some of your content briefly when I was working, and I thought they were talking about my book, so I thought I'd call. But seriously, in all seriousness, I have written a book. I am self-publishing at the point right now because obviously, I'm a first-time author, and I can't really...
Ira, you got to ask the question. What's your question for Jeff?
I need help, Jeff. Can I somehow get a hold of you and get your advice and opinion?
Of course. If you email me, and I'm open about this.
Are you sure you want to do this?
100%. ANNGOLD22@gmail.com. I always check it. I'll be happy to hear what you have to say. 100%.
Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, of course.
All right, Ira, you got it. Listen, you're not just an author. Welcome to the jungle, of course. That was Ira. Ira's down on the street right now. He said that when he heard some of those stories from the USFL, he thought that we were talking about his book. Heyo. Jeff, you're not just an author. You're a salesman. You're a showman. If somebody buys your book right now and emails you proof of their order, what will you do in return?
Well, I always send, like, signed book plates. I have postcards. I have stickers. I was just, you know, to me, it's an interactive experience. You know,
sure.
So I try to get people.
You're great
book.
Like that.
I'm trying to give it. I do, like, I've been sending out a lot of T-shirts. We have these cool San Antonio Gunslinger T-shirts that I ordered. So, you know, I'm happy to Happy to partake.
Good. I like it. All right. Thank you. Where would they send that email? To the same address? And keep in mind, you just gave out your email address to, you know, this network now has 200 plus radio stations. We're on TV. We're on satellite. Are you sure you want to give out an email address to some of the knuckleheads who listen to this program?
Yeah, 100%.
You know the show.
I love the interactive nature of it all. I really do. It's angold22 at Gmail.
All right. So it's angold, right?
Yeah,
22.
Yeah.
angold22@gmail.com. This one is from @PrincePaul3. Does @JeffPerlman think that Vince McMahon can pull off a new football league? Good question. Where do you come out?
I think the Alliance, you know, there are two leagues coming up. And the Alliance, I think, is a much better chance.
Sure.
I think people see Vince McMahon, not always fair, but kind of gimmicky, and the league is going to be gimmicky. I like that the Alliance has Oliver Luck. I like that they have Ebersole. They hired Steve Spurrier, who was the first coach of the Tampa Bay Bandits.
Love that. How can you go wrong with that?
But I bet you agree with this. Like, the thing the USFL did that was a screw-up in hindsight, you're not going to go head-to-head with the NFL and win.
Right.
You're just not. I think if your quarterback gets signed, if you're the quarterback for the Omaha, whatever they are, and he's signed by the 49ers, you issue a press release, you have a press conference, you wish him well, and you celebrate the future stars start here. You know what I mean? And the USFL did not do that.
Yes. No, right. They try to go head-to-head. They try to compete.
Right.
Like the CBA. The CBA was fun. Anytime one of their guys made it, it was great, right? Anytime one of their players or coaches made it, it was something to celebrate because they were in there to try to get to the NBA. This book is called Football for a Buck, The Crazy Rise and Crazier Demise of the USFL. It's out right now. Jeff, it seems kind of self-evident, but there are lots of ways to get books these days. If somebody wants to buy this book, how should they do it?
You know, Amazon or your bookstore, Barnes & Noble, all the standard places. And I also recently did a ranking on my website of the top 25 USFL players of all time. I did a countdown.
Tell me about that very quickly.
I had number one, Sam Mills. Who I just want to say, Montclair State, Division III.
God, he was great.
Cut by Toronto, cut by Cleveland. The Cleveland coach calls Carl Peterson, GM of the Stars, and says, I got a 5'9 middle linebacker. You're not going to want him, but watch him. And because of the USFL, he became a star. So it was Sam Mills, Kelvin Bryant.
Sure.
Herschel Walker, Bobby Hebert, who on my audio recording, which got sent back, the guy pronounced it Hebert the entire time.
Bobby Hebert.
I mean, seriously.
Hebert was great, wasn't he?
Hebert was great.
I loved Hebert.
He was throwing Anthony Carter.
Uh-huh.
And Jim Kelly was number five.
I love that. Tell me again, who, you just said one that just slipped my mind. Who was it?
Kelvin Bryant.
Not Kelvin Bryant.
Herschel.
Herschel. Did you talk? How much time have you spent with Herschel? Herschel is, man, he is such a gentleman. He is great.
Zero. He wouldn't talk.
Ah.
He wouldn't talk. There are two main guys I wanted who didn't talk. Trump and Walker.
I can tell you, for instance, that when I first interviewed Herschel, I thought to myself, man, this dude's going to walk in here and it's going to be a problem. He was nothing like I thought. None of these guys are what they appear. We don't know any of these guys. Herschel was nothing like I thought.
Yeah.
Total gentleman.
Yeah, and a legend. I mean, he was the most important figure in the USFL.
Right, sure he was.
He was the one who started it all.
Jeff Perlman, out here on the West Coast. Jeff, so good to see you. Congrats on that. I know that this was something that you wanted to do very badly for a long time, and you did it right there.
Thank
Good
you
job.
So much. Thanks, Jim. I appreciate
Good seeing
it.
You, Jeff. Thanks so much. Jeff Perlman, you should get the book. There are so many amazing stories. We could not get to all of them, but it is a fascinating read.